Please stand by.
It's the weekend of July 9th, 2005. I'm Jeff, and you're listening to This and That with Jeff and Pat. That's right, Pat is not in the studio this week. She is off. She's off visiting her folks, but she'll be back next week. I wanted to welcome all of the new subscribers from iTunes. iTunes 4.9 came out, I guess it was last week, and we've seen quite a bit of new subscribers. If you're listening to the show for the first time, this is not your typical This and That with Jeff and Pat. Usually Pat's here. So that's one of the big differences, and we're going to have a slightly different format because of that. I did one show on my own probably 2-3 months ago, and I wasn't really all that happy with it. So I'm going to shake things up a little bit and do something different. If you do want to check out a typical This and That with Jeff and Pat, just listen to some of our previous shows. You get a feel for what Pat and I are like in the studio. We usually start the show with some sort of comedy bit, some sort of political satire usually, and then get into some other things. So welcome, and I hope you enjoy this show. First thing I wanted to talk about real briefly was I wanted to give my condolences to all of our friends and listeners in England with the terrorist bombing of the subways over there. It's just absolutely riveting to all of us Americans and, you know, people all over the world. I think all of our hearts are with you. I did want to make a couple comments, not to make light of this at all, but a couple comments about the media afterwards. I always get a kick out of two things. The big comment was, well, the English have a stiff upper lip after all this. They're going through life as they're getting back to normal and fighting through this. And we heard the same type of comments when America had their 9/11 and in the bombings in Madrid. And really, all the other terrorist bombings all around, and I always think in the back of my mind, what's the alternative? You know, what would people, what should people do? Ah, I don't know, John. People here just can't seem to work. The subways are not opening up. Subways, no traffic. Work is shut down for months. In fact, the government is shutting down the government because they don't really know what to do. It's just havoc here. England is opening up to anybody. No government anymore. The society has just stopped, John. Is that what we expect? So, I mean, it's nice to say that British have a stiff upper lip and the American people are resolute after 9/11, but I don't really know what the alternative is. People's human nature is to move on, get on with it, fight terrorism, mourn loved ones, and move on and live life. And then the second media observation I have, of course, is, you know, in local news in Dallas, and I'm sure local news everywhere, probably in the world, has these spotlights on, ooh, the Dallas DART system. We have extra security ramped up now because of the terrorist attacks in England. You know, I just don't think that has anything to do with reality. In fact, I mean, especially in, you know, Dallas rail, but even New York subways, Al-Qaeda is known pretty much for, you know, spending months at a time planning and coordinating these one-day attacks. I've always sort of felt that the day after terrorism is the safest time to do anything. Get out of the house, go to use public transportation. So it's just funny the day or two after these things, the governments around the world and security around the world get heightened up, and especially the same form of attack, which is, you know, seems kind of ludicrous to me. Anyways, that's my comments. I don't mean to make light of the terrorist activities at all. I am making light of some of the things that the media chooses to fill their time with, just, I think, to keep talking about it. Anyways, the rest of the show is going to be, I'm going to talk a little bit about one of my idols in jazz, and through this idol, I wanted to paint a picture, take you back in time to the 1920s, the golden age of jazz, or the roaring 20s, or whatever name you want to put at it, and I hope it's enjoyable. And then after that, I wanted to play some excerpts of some of our old shows, and that's going to be the show. So hang on. Last week was the first week of the month, and What we do on This and That with Jeff and Pat is typically talk about that month. There's usually it's like a national month of something, and we go through the list. One of the things that I did mention last week is July, whenever July comes and this hot weather just comes pouring down, I think of Bic spider back. Now, I want to tell you a little bit about Bics, but the reasons why I think of Bics is because where I was growing up, which is the Quad Cities, I grew up in Rock Island, Illinois. Bic Spiderbeck was born and raised across the river in a neighboring town called Davenport, Iowa. And every July, they have a Bic Spiderbeck Jazz Festival. This year, it's July 28th through 31st. So I've kind of come to think of hot weather and Bics at the same time. And the other reason why I think of Bics in the summertime is because there is a there was a summer that he spent in 1924, and I'll get into that just a little bit more, that to me sums up this whole romantic generation of the 1920s. And in fact, I wrote a song about it last year that I'm going to play towards the end of the segment, that I think probably one of the songs I'm most proudest of. In fact, I submitted it to GarageBand.com, and let me see here. I wrote down some of the... today, even today in GarageBand.com, it's still number 15 all time in pop music, most original song. And that's pretty incredible. For 2 weeks, it got best male vocal, which is really incredible because I'm not that great of a singer. For 2 weeks, it got best keyboards in pop. And for 1 week each, it got best lyrics and best grooviest rhythm in pop. So it got accolades, and I listened to it. I haven't listened to it for a while now, but I listened to it in preparation for this show a couple days ago, and it did bring back what I was trying to articulate in this song, sort of this feeling of the era. So let's start this segment off by talking about a brief biography of Bic Spiderbeck. Bix was born in March 1903, and he, at age three, you know, the legends are that he was playing the piano and picking up songs note by note. He had this great ear. He picked up a used trumpet when he was basically starting to go to high school, and he learned to play it on his own, again, mostly, you know, playing by ear. And one of the keys to his music style is that he never really learned to read music, and he never really learned to play the trumpet correctly. For those of you who play wind musical instruments or brass musical instruments, you'll know that there's a lot of ways to sort of form the same note. Well, Bix just figured out his ways, and he didn't play the conventional ways. And that results in some of his adult life. He could play things that really other people really couldn't play very well because he had this fancy fingering. At the same time, kind of limited him in several ways. He was a really good athlete, good student, until the riverboats from New Orleans started to come up the river, Mississippi River, and play the early jazz. And Bix just was absolutely hog wild, as a lot of kids were back then. And he quickly sort of became a lousy student. So much so that his parents sent him off to military academy in Chicago. And being so close to Chicago and so close to some of the jazz going on there, this would have been around 1919, Bix ran off continuously late nights in Chicago, started to learn how to drink, and started to learn how to listen to the great jazz that he loved so much, and started to play with the guys. So in 1923, he started to play with a band called the Wolverines, and I'm going to play some segments of some of this music a little bit later. The Wolverines were incredible, a mass of young musicians, absolutely tipping the scale of improvisational and sort of pushing jazz in a new place. They played largely around the Midwest, largely around Indiana, a lot of big college circuit. In 1924, he moved on to a bigger band called Gene Golcat, and again, very innovative. In 1926, he played with a guy named Frank Trombauer and his band. 1926, he went back to Gene Golcat. 1927, he got a gig with Paul Whiteman, who was, at that time, the biggest name in jazz. Kind of a white bread form of jazz, if you will. But it was a big, big deal, and they traveled all around the country. In fact, they stopped in Dallas and played probably about 3 miles away from me. In 1929, he stopped with the Paul Whiteman band. He went through rehab, and we'll talk a little bit about that later. Went back to New York and never was quite the same. In 1931, at the age of 28, he died. So why do I think this story is so significant? Now, first of all, I admire any kind of musical genius, and Bix was absolutely a musical genius. Obviously, he had the innate skills of, you know, his ear and everything, but he really pushed the envelope. And one of the things about when you hear some of this old Dixieland music, sometimes it's easy to dismiss it as, well, that was back when music was a little bit simpler. But if you listen to some of the arrangements, in fact, if you listen to some of the music that's behind me now, they were pushing it. They were really innovative. I'm still amazed at some of the arrangements that a guy named Dick Chalice, who did a lot of the Bix arrangements, was able to come up with. The best musicians got into this genre, and Bix was just about the best of them. I like the fact that Bix's story is all about the story of the Jazz Age, these roaring 20s. Now, when Bix was with the Wolverines, they spent a month in 1924 along the banks of Lake Michigan, near Gary, Indiana, in a club called Marquette Park Pavilion. And this serves up as sort of the central theme of the song that I wrote called Dreams by the Lake. And to me, I read about this in a book by Ralph Burton called Remembering Bix. It's out of print, but you can probably still find it someplace. It's an incredible book where it cites a lot of things that are going on around Bix, but also especially that summer. And what I love about it is these kids were 21, 22 years old, absolutely on the edge of playing, you know, incredible jazz that was pushing the boundaries. And they were very popular. They were great friends. They drank a lot. They smoked a lot. They were 21-year-olds. And to me, it kind of encapsulates a lot of what the 1920s were: hot music, hot jazz, hot women, hot drink. One of the other interesting citations in the book was there is a big problem that blacks and whites could not play jazz music in venues together. But music, of course, goes beyond racial color, and the black musicians loved what these white guys were doing, and the white guys loved what the black guys were doing, and they would meet in after-hours clubs, play jazz together. Despite all social norms and everything, theirs was a love of music, and there was no idea of race in that. And there's a whole chapter devoted to one of their encounters in an after-hours club that's just totally engaging. I like to even reread that chapter every year or so. This kind of music, there's a technical terminology called sock time. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of it, but there was an emphasis on beat number one versus, you know, a lot of music has emphasis on beats one and three or two and four. Sock time had a big emphasis on one, and one of the implications of that, it makes it very easy to dance to. And they were largely a dance band, and the young kids, the college kids, this was it. This was the outrageous, buck the system, screw the man music. And again, I don't know if that comes out listening to this type of music now. In 1924, within that summer, he developed a relationship with Hoagy Carmichael, and Hoagy Carmichael would later, in later years, although later years for Bix wasn't that much, turned out to be a pretty good friend to him, and Hoagy was very influenced by Bix. In fact, I have a quote here. Hoagy told of a time after a gig, this is back in 24, that he and Bix stopped on a cold night along a lonely country road, took out their horns, and began playing. Now, Hoagy was more of a pianist, but as a lot of musicians in those days, he could play just about anything. He said, "Bix was off. Clean, wonderful streams of melody filled the dawn, ruffled the countryside, stirred the still night. I bolted along to keep up a rhythmic lead while Bix laid it out. A wind drove autumn leaves around us. Bix finished in one amazing blast of pyrotechnic improvisation. He took his horn away from his mouth as if in a sleepwalker's dream." What was unique about Bix is his tone. He played this sweet, unconventional tone. There was two schools of jazz developing at that time. There was this cool, sweet, laid-back form of jazz, and there was this hot, kicking, fast, up-tempo. And these two, you see them still today in a lot of ways, but they were probably best articulated in like the 1950s. So you had this cool jazz, Gary Mulligans, the Miles Davises, the Chet Bakers, that really followed and were all influenced by Bix. And then you had the hotter jazz by the Dizzy Gillespie's, Charlie Parker's, that were sort of influenced by the hot jazz that was going on at that time. A lot of Louis Armstrong, Fletcher Henderson, those kind of people. Bix had a very melodic improvisational style. It wasn't just this flurry of notes. In fact, he once made the comment, "Why do you play so many notes? It's the brilliance is in the quiet in between them." His personality described was a fun-loving, quiet, and sweet guy. Famous guitarist at that time was named Eddie Condon, and he likened Bix's toll to a girl saying yes. I love that terminology. So let's hear what that what it sounds like. Records from that time obviously don't quite encapsulate what Bix offered, especially from this tonal perspective, but this is one of his most famous solos. It's from a song called Singin' the Blues, and this solo had people just going wild. And I want you to note how sweet this the melody is that he takes upon this song. Next solo is from I'm Coming Virginia. It's one of my favorite songs. I want you to note guitarist Eddie Lang. If you're a guitarist, you probably know who Eddie Lang is. He was one of the very earliest jazz guitarists. And I think he's incredible, especially since he was playing, you know, chordal structures and things that nobody had ever done before. Eddie Lang died early as well. He died at the age of 31 from a botched tonsillectomy. Apparently he lost too much blood. Tonsillectomy, pretty common procedure. Finally, this is a solo from Riverboat Shuffle. Thank you. Now, when he went through rehab, Bix had a reputation. He could drink bottles of gin at any one time. I mean, he was a total wreck. He was a guy that was just out of control, addicted to alcohol. You know, there's all kinds of speculations by people, even today, about why and wherefore, as they, you know, sort of ponder his psychological things that were going on in his life, going on at the era at the time. Some ascribe it to parents that were never really listened to jazz, never really appreciated his gifts. Some say that he was fighting with sexual tensions of maybe being gay. I don't really buy a lot of that stuff. And I think it was just sort of they did a lot of drinking back then, and Bix probably had the chromosomes that made him especially addictive, but he was an absolute wreck. And basically in 1929, he would have been 27 years old. He was pretty much finished with the cornet. It takes a lot of stamina to play that, and he really couldn't quite do it as well. He still played some gigs, don't get me wrong. He was in New York City, but he really focused on the piano, and he was heavily influenced by some of the classical classical musicians, pianists at that time, like Ravel and Debussy, and you can see it in some of his piano works. I'm going to play probably his most famous one, a little bit of In a Mist. He also wrote three other works, one called Candlelights in the Dark Flashes. And if you get a chance, I'll have some, you know, websites with some of this stuff. Candlelights is just extraordinarily beautiful. He used a lot of augmented chords. He used a lot of chords that he saw Ravel and Debussy use. He was really influenced by sort of this impressionistic type of piano, and yet you could see from In the Mist, he really incorporated into a jazz feel. In the song that I wrote, there's a little piano break, and I tried to be as faithful as possible to make it Bix-like. So I use a lot of augmented chords. I use some of the same rhythms in my little amateurish way. He died in 1931. He was alone in an apartment in New York. Actually, it was in Brooklyn in the heat of summer there in August. And he influenced a lot of trumpet players still to this day, but some of the more notables that he directly influenced was Miles Davis, Red Nichols, Woody Shaw, Freddie Hubbard, and Chet Baker. So that's the story of Bix Beiderbecke. I hope that was interesting, and I hope you think of 1920s jazz with a little bit of a different thought. Some of the greatest musicians and arrangers were pursuing jazz at that time, and I think it warrants another look. Okay, this is the song that I wrote last year called Dreams by the Lake. After the song is complete, we'll go right into some excerpts from the best of Jeff and Pat from the first 20 shows. Enjoy, all. We'll see you next week. Pat will be back in the studio.
Old jazz musicians tell of a boy, wealthy with talent and filled with the joy of the music that passed in the night long ago. The jazz age was booming, the speakeasies full. The boy stole away to a life that he knew was the only thing he'd ever need in the night. By the lake in the summer of youth, hot music poured down with gin and vermouth. Night after night, all the girls that came down, sweeter perfume by the smell and the sound of his silver cornet they'll never forget. Late nights in bootleg and wrinkled old clothes, they couldn't know that this legend would go from a rocket that lights up the sky to a mist. Dreams by the lake in the summer of youth, hot music poured down with gin and vermouth. Night after night, all the girls that came down, sweet air perfumed by the smell and the sound of his silver cornet, they'll never forget. Folks would come round always eager to please. They would grab him with drink in spite of his disease. So bottles were emptied and music was played. The gin stopped pouring in, but the music lives on. Hot music poured down with gin and vermouth. Night after night, all the girls that came down, sweet air perfumed by the smell and the sound of his silver cornet, they'll never forget. The middle of summer, on top of a hill, the boy is amused when the midwestern air fills with music that he used to make long ago.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Jeff, has been described as an icon of alternative music. He's a singer, songwriter, and guitarist.
Well, thank you very much, Terry. You know, I also, actually, my main instrument is the piano. I've just kind of picked up the guitar in the last couple of years. But it's a real pleasure to be on the show. I feel very lucky.
Well, you are really lucky.
Okay.
Can you talk a little bit about, composing and sampling the music backing for the records, what your approach is to that?
Well, I don't know if I really do that much sampling. A lot of my music, though, is digitally based. I've got a Yamaha Motif keyboard. It's MIDI enabled. I use a lot of acoustic instruments as well. But you know, working in the digital is kind of
Bobby Digital.
Well, I'm sorry. What's that?
Bobby Digital.
What?
Bobby Digital.
I guess I do, you know, use digital stuff, but I don't know if I'd call myself Bobby Digital.
You do something on some of your music that I think you call a detuned piano. And listening to it, I never knew whether it was an electric piano or what, but it has this really distinctive sound.
Well, you know, I use different settings on the keyboard. There is one setting that's sort of a detuned setting.
So you use the word detuned. What do you mean by detuned, and what is detuned?
Well, a detuned piano, I don't really think I use it that much. Most of the time I try to tune my piano, but a detuned piano is just a piano that's not tuned, and you can digitally make a piano not tuned very, very easily.
What is detuned?
Well, it's just basically when you're... it sounds like a piano that is not tuned, you know, one that's been sitting around the studio for a few years and no one's ever tuned it.
What is detuned?
I thought I'd just explain that, Terry. By the way, you know, I've got to say, you are a lot more attractive than I had thought.
Old dirty bastard.
Well, I know, I mean, it's true. You can call me that, but, you know, I think you're pretty hot.
Dirty, dirty bastard.
Hey, I like the way that kind of rhythm sounds. Hold on a second. Let me get this going.
start doing what you just did.
Old dirty bastard, dirty dirty
yeah.
bastard, old dirty bastard, dirty dirty 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 bastard. There's also Bobby Digital. There's also Bobby Digital.
All right, I think you're through.
Well, I really want to thank you so much for talking with us.
All right. Well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure, even though you're a little bit wacky.
My name is Jeff. I got a beat to share with you. I got a rhyme that's kind of lame, but I got nothing else to do. A podcast at my microphone. I got so much to tell. I know you're going to like it, so check out my XML.
This is Pat on the side, and there are rules that I dislike. Like Jeff makes me talk to you 6 inches from the mic. Some say I'm outspoken, some say that I'm a reb. I say outrageous things and put my panties on the web.
There is shizzle in my nizzle, and I don't mean to boast, but I got freaky on our podcast when I talk with Terry Gross. I'm a white guy who can break it, I can shake it, cause I know you vote for us in Podcast Alley. Check it, yo.
If Brett Pids are listening, we're out of here by 7. I'll meet him at the coffee bar inside 7-Eleven. I know he's over 40, but that does not repel. Bell. Unless he listens to my rhymes, I'm home alone with Belle again.
It, yo.
Pat, it has come to my attention that one of our listeners thinks that you have soccer mom mentality.
What?
Yeah, soccer mom mentality, you know.
Could that be because I'm a mom and I have 3.2 kids and I live in the suburb?
But you don't.
I know, none of that's true.
You're single and you're 40, I won't say.
Okay, so all right, this person thinks I have a, so what? I mean, he's wrong. Let's move on. What do
well, the person also said that I was the obvious leader of this podcast.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Actually, when I think about it, I completely agree.
What?
And in the, because I care about this show so much, I have to make a change.
Wait a second. You the leader?
Yo,
I think we're teammates here. Stop laughing.
Oh, that's funny. Anyways, I need to make a lineup change. And Pat, you're out of here.
What?
Go.
What do you mean I'm out of here?
That's it, baby. We've had a good run, but we got to stop.
Oh, get your hands off me. What are you doing?
Get out.
Stop.
Get out.
Stop.
Get out right now.
No, I'm not going.
Go. Man, that was harder than I thought. Okay, who can I get to do the show with me? Luckily, I have Susan here. Hey! All right, let's get this started. Get the mic on. It's the weekend of June 11th, 2005. I'm Jeff.
This is Susan.
And you're listening to Cruisin' and Bruisin' with Jeff and Susan.
I'm not taking this sitting down.
Pat, what is that? You gotta...
This is not happening.
You don't have a gun. You don't like it. You're not a gun person. Put it down. Susan, oh my God, what did you do? Oh my God. You, Pat, you must really love podcasting.
I do.
All right, get back in here.
Yeah.
Let's call the paramedics and see if we can revive Susan. It was one of those searing hot days in Dallas, the kind of day where the heat reflecting from the pavement hits you in the crotch and says, "Wake up, Mr. Star, you've got work to do."
as you're walking out of the dark bar with sunglasses on, where you just put the shine on a fella who needed to be taught a lesson. I was sitting in my office when she walked in, without so much as a knock on my steel-plated door.
Are you podcast star?
This gal had a...
Don't call me gal.
This skirt had an uncanny way of knowing just what I was thinking.
Podcast star is the name I use when I'm not using my other names. Mr. Star will do.
She had on a tight little Audrey Hepburn dress, you know, the one from Breakfast at Tiffany. The kind that can make a man swoon after closing time, but before five causes one to remember a certain affair 10 years ago that ended in teary goodbyes, false hopes, and broken dreams. Dreams plundering a fortnight of the chin and cheap jazz joints. But I digress.
Mr. Star, Mr. Star, I'm Molly Evans of the Evans Broadcasting Conglomerate, and I've been told you're the best.
Well, Miss Evans, if that's your real name, the best is a relative term that is used when someone wants something that you are not prepared to give up without a fight.
Well, I've been told that you're that good. You have a nice office here.
Cut with the baloney, Miss Evans. Either you have come here to talk about my office and clean it like it's never been cleaned before, especially those dust bunnies underneath the file cabinet, or you have come to talk business. I'm not cheap, and you're on the clock.
Money is no concern, Mr. Star. I've got plenty of podcast money. Just ask my band leader, Jimmy Sutherland.
The doll hat class, I'll say that. She knew what a man wanted to hear and what a man desperately needed. The sweet, sweet scent of green. A green more vibrant than a freshly manicured golf course, smelling of morning dew, laced with an unmistakable whiff of martini. Dry with a twist.
Well, now that that is settled, what can I do for you?
I want you to tail my man. I think he's up to no good.
Tail your man? I don't like what that term implies, Ms. Evans. I'm an established member of the heterosexual union.
Ooh, I'm glad that your member is established, Mr. Star. But I want you to follow him and tell me what he's doing.
What do you suspect?
I run one of the largest podcasts in the country, and you may know it, the This and That podcast, and...
This and That podcast. I've heard tell of this show and this new technology, but I've never been so close to this kind of greatness.
I think he's running off and doing guest appearances and with other podcasters.
All right. Cut the dramatics, sweetheart. Guest appearances, you say, huh? Well, why don't you collect yourself and go down to the corner 7-Eleven and get yourself one of their new gourmet sandwiches. I've heard they're quite good. And a hot cup of Joe. I'll meet you there in about 35 to 40 minutes. I've got some, research to do.
Yes, research indeed. Now, where did I put my iPod?
Podcast star. look at me, at me, at me, at me, at me. Taking on America, is there room for us in this hysteria? Someone fame, others want release. I wanna be a star, can I have it, please? Have it, please, have it, please. I just wanna be a podcast star. I just wanna be a podcast star. I just wanna be a podcast star. I just wanna be a podcast star.
To the Batmobile. Let's go.
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Roger. Ready to move out.
Robin, let's roll. Commissioner Gordon just called. There's trouble in Gotham City.
Holy iPod Batman, trouble in Gotham City?
That starts with a T and rhymes with a P, boy wonder.
What do we do, Batman?
Well, first, we must sing our theme song. Ready?
Holy podcast star, Batman, let's sing.
I love to be Batman. I love to dress up in my tight little black suit.
And I am boy wonder. I fight crime with Batman, I'm prepared to shoot.
Together we fight all the crime
in that crazy funky town that we call Gotham City.
Batman! I love to be Batman.
Batman! Holy cow, I'm boy wonder.
Batman! I like to dress like a bat.
Batman! You know, he's crazy like that.
Batman! Together we fight all the crime in that crazy funky town that we call Gotham City. Together we fight all the crime in that crazy funky town that we call Gotham City.
Where have you two been? Singing your theme song again?
It's an important part of our act, Commissioner Gordon. What's the situation?
I'll tell you what the situation is.
Holy child molester Batman, it's Mr. Rogers.
Hello, boys and boys. Welcome to my neighborhood.
Gotham belongs to no one except the good people of this city, Mr. Rogers.
Sure, I know what you mean. Can you say, this is my neighborhood now?
This is my neighborhood? Holy Paris Hilton, you've got me again.
Oh, look who's dropped by. It's Mr. McFeely of the Speedy Delivery Messenger Service. Sure, looks like we have a package and, oh, it's ticking. Here, Batman, I think it's a special surprise for you.
For me? Aw, you shouldn't have. I didn't get you anything. Drat! Foiled again!
Did you like that? I'll bet you did, sure. There's another one 1,000 times larger, set to go off in Main Street if the city doesn't give me $1 million. Can you say $1 million?
Holy haberdashery, Batman! We need to defuse that bomb or a lot of people will die.
Right you are, boy wonder. But how? But how indeed?
Well, first, just kill him, Batman.
Oh, good idea. Oh, and Commissioner Gordon, this one's for you. That guy always creeped me out.
Holy Public Broadcasting Corporation, Batman, well played. You're a maniac in that tight black suit, not to mention hot.
Thank you, boy wonder. Let's go defuse that bomb now and then go back to the Batcave for some hot, wild man to Batboy lovemaking.
Yeah.